Just about every day, you read about another reason to switch. Take this opinion piece by a columnist in eWeek.com. With security holes to the left of us and programming incompatibilities to the right, Windows SP2 is giving corporate IT departments more reason than ever to consider a move to Linux desktops. How about this one from CNBC Online? HP's first Linux laptop, a winner. Or this major announcement just yesterday. America Online, the world's largest ISP, now dialable by desktop Linux users. More and more people are discovering and switching to Linux, a computer operating system that is free, not just money-wise, but free from viruses, worms, hacks, freeze-ups that plague the desktop computer that you're probably using right now. Statistics show that market share for Linux is rising. It's about neck and neck with Apple Macintosh users who, ironically, already have a Linux-like operating system in their Macs and probably don't even know it. Even city governments are making the switch. And tomorrow, people around the world will be encouraged to install Linux on their PCs. Tomorrow is being dubbed Software Freedom Day by Linux user groups and the Go Open Source campaign. People in countries like South Africa, Bangladesh, India, Malaysia, and Vietnam are going to be lining up to have Linux installed on their PCs for free. So should you make the switch? That's what we'll be talking about this hour. How easy is it to do it? Give us a call. Our number, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Let me introduce my guests. Bill McCarty is author of Learning Red Hat Enterprise Linux and Fedora. It's out in its fourth edition from O'Reilly. He's Associate Professor of Management Information Systems, School of Business and Management at Azusa Pacific University in Azusa, California. He joins us from our NPR studios in Washington. Welcome to Science Friday, Bill.
Thank you, Ira. Good afternoon to you.
Thank you. Wade Rausch is Senior Editor at Technology Review in San Francisco, and he joins us from member station KQED in San Francisco. Hi, Wade.
Hello, Ira. How are
you doing?
Hi
there. You know, Wade, let me begin with you because I've been tooling around with Linux for quite some time, but until I read your article in Technology Review about your review of Linux, that I decided, hey, let's do a program on it. Because you wrote that it is now possible, and you did, it is now possible to order a Linux computer from Walmart, of all those radical places.
That's
for
right.
Like $280 or something like that, and you did it?
$278 to be exact. I did it, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you open the box, what do you get?
You get a box, you get a computer that looks a lot like any of the standard tower-shaped desktops that you can buy with Windows on them, and it comes with about the same amount of memory, the same processor power, the same peripherals. You know, what you're not getting is any Microsoft software, and that's really why I ordered the thing. I figured I really should try it out myself before I sat down to write a long article about Linux. And, I was pleasantly surprised.
So where do you get the software from? What happens? You know, do you have to send away for it, or how do you get the software?
Well,
and what software is there?
Yeah. Yeah. The Walmart machine, which is a Microtel PC, comes pre-installed with an operating system called Linspire. Linspire is one of a number of so-called distributions of Linux. Linux is a free program, but anyone who wants to is also free to take it, add their own bells and whistles, and resell it under their own name. And Linspire happens to be one of the companies that does that.
Used to be Lindos.
That's right.
Yeah.
They had to change their name after a litany of pressure from Microsoft over the rhyme between Lindos and Windows. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Linspire is... it comes with the Microtel PC from Walmart, and you just turn it on and it boots up the same way you might expect from Windows. And from there, you can do practically anything you want. There's a web browser pre-installed, other doohickeys like an MP3 player, a VoIP phone program, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And you can get a word processor and a whole suite like you could Microsoft has for nothing.
Yeah, well, with Linspire, you can basically dial up. As soon as you get online, you're taken to the Linspire website where you can download free or nearly free versions of word processing software, presentation software, spreadsheet software, sort of open source equivalents of all the same things that you get in Microsoft Office.
Hmm. And it looks similar to it. In other words, it's a point and click with mice and everything on a Windows top there, on a desktop?
Yeah. That's right. One of the things about Linux that has really changed the most in the last, say, 5 years is that programmers have made a huge effort to create graphical environments that make Linux, you know, look and act much like what you would expect from a Windows machine or a Macintosh machine. Before that, the whole operating system had been a fairly geeky kind of operation where you had to learn a lot of typed commands, and you would work mainly in a sort of command line interface that resembles the MS-DOS window. Mm-hmm. People who, you know, are old Windows users might remember MS-DOS.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, it gets rid of all that and, you know, makes Linux just as easy to use in a point-and-click fashion as Mac or Windows.
Bill McCarty, speaking of geeky things, what about all those viruses and worms? Don't take this personally. What about those viruses and worms? And, you know, the attackware that attacks all our PCs, don't they attack a Linux box too?
They certainly do. And from time to time, Linux boxes do indeed fall victim to those sorts of malware. The Linux user isn't automatically guaranteed protection against them. On the other hand, intrinsically, Linux is a much more secure and securable operating environment. So the difficulties presented by those problems, the likelihoods of those sorts of attacks are far less, probably 1% of the volume that we see in Microsoft products.
Now, the Linux operating system is really a close cousin to the Unix operating system, right?
Yes, I myself would regard it as a sibling. Some people would see the relationship as more distant or closer.
And Unix is, or one flavor of it, is at the heart of the Macintosh. So why not just buy a Mac? I mean, what's the advantages of a Linux system?
Well, I've never owned a Mac, but I admire Macintoshes. My personal reason for not having one is simply cost. Mm-hmm. Macintoshes are probably better value today than they have been at times when Apple has been a more prosperous company. And I don't mean to say that they're not a good buy or that mm-hmm. people shouldn't buy a Mac, but I'm a professor at a liberal arts college and on a tight budget. Therefore, when I buy computing equipment or software, I'm looking very hard for value. And for me, at least, the value is found in the generic commodity kind of hardware that's generally used to power Microsoft or Windows systems,
right,
rather than the proprietary hardware that that Apple uses to build the Mac, which has some advantages. The Mac, as a result, is a better integrated piece of equipment, and Apple's warranties are probably second to none in the industry.
Mm-hmm. But that price thing, that's really what is driving a lot of the countries around the world to switch. I mean, there are
sure.
a lot of cities that you can go down the list: Brazil, China, you know, cities like Munich and Vienna, that, you know, they have to buy up thousands and thousands of these machines that they would be paying, you know, premiums on just for the operating system. If you can get a box at Walmart for $278, Wade, imagine what you can if you buy 10,000 of them.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. But at the same time, when you switch over from a Windows setup, especially if you're talking about a big operation like a big company or a whole city government, you are going to run into some costs just from the transition mm-hmm. and the training and so forth. So, you know, the cost of acquiring, setting up, training around Linux isn't necessarily going to justify the investment, you know, the first year. But a lot of these municipalities and companies are doing it because they are just sick of being enthralled to Windows, basically. They're looking for alternatives. They want to have some more flexibility. They want to take advantage of some of the innovation that's going on in the open source world, and don't want to be locked into Microsoft. Don't want to be locked into an American company in particular mm-hmm. in some instances.
And how is Microsoft taking all of this?
You mentioned, well, I would say,
you mentioned in your article that they should be taking some antacid pills as they read about the changes going on.
I think behind the scenes, people at Microsoft have been thinking carefully about the open source phenomenon for a long time. In some of their more public pronouncements, you might see a bit of anger, you might see a bit of resentment. But from the people I spoke with at Microsoft for my piece, mm-hmm. I really think they're getting more realistic about the fact that, you know, Linux is out there. The open source phenomenon is not going to go away. And you know, it's got a growing market share, and at some point they're going to have to kind of reach an accommodation. They've already started to do that. In fact, in some ways, in an unprecedented move, they've begun to open up some of their own proprietary code so that software developers can actually get in there and see what makes Windows work. That makes it easier for them to develop their own programs that run on Windows. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it also just kind of brings, it keeps people who are Windows software writers from defecting, to Linux and the other alternatives.
Bill McCarty, I saw this piece of software on the web. I mean, I was, surfing around looking for Linux. And actually, Charles Berquist, our web producer, knew about this. He says there's a disk and there's a whole family of free stuff for Linux called Live CD. And this is a bootable CD. You get the CD for nothing, or you make the CD by downloading the image from, the web, and you stick the CD in any computer. And it will run, it'll just boot up in Linux, and you can take the CD out and go anywhere you want to, anywhere in the world on anybody's computer and run it.
Well, there's a little bit of hype involved there. First, let me say that that name, to my knowledge, doesn't apply to a single product.
Right.
There are several Linux distributions that provide so-called live CDs, which, as you mentioned, you can download and load on a computer. One of the small bugaboos that does persist in the Linux world, however, is the issue of hardware compatibility. You may, in loading Linux on your computer, find that everything works fine, but say your network adapter card or your sound card. Mm-hmm. Linux support in those areas has traditionally been weak, and it's much stronger today than ever before, but it's not universal. People who make such cards would go out of business if their product didn't work with Microsoft Windows. Mm-hmm. But the same isn't true of Linux. Some of them don't yet embrace that as a supported platform, and you may find that you need to swap out your network card or swap out your sound card before the computer will fully and properly work.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to Kathy in Portland. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I'm wondering about. I work on a Macintosh, and I'm wondering about how does Linux support the graphics software that I use all the time, i.e., Photoshop and Illustrator. Would I have to buy all new versions?
Yeah.
And is Adobe going to be writing new versions of those programs?
Good question.
I can jump in.
Wait.
There. The whole open source community has been really working hard on creating open source equivalents of practically every important application out there. And there's a program called GIMP, G-I-M-P. I think it stands for New Image Processor or something like that. And it does most of the same things that Photoshop does.
Wow.
There are not Adobe, Adobe has not created versions of Photoshop and its other programs that run on Linux, I'd be surprised if they did, frankly, because they're used to selling their software for a hefty price, and
But someone else will come along in the open source world, possibly.
Will come along and build something like GIMP, which has its own kind of. It's very different from Photoshop. It has a different set of commands you need to learn, but I think you can wind up doing graphics that are just as fancy.
The other issue with that would be how other people would be able to read your files, because when you share Photoshop files with other people who have Photoshop, clearly it's an easy thing to do that. But if you've got GIMP and you're taking it to a service bureau and they say, we don't have that, how's that going to interact?
Well, another thing that Linux programmers have been careful to do over the last few years is make it possible for you to save your files in standard formats. So with the open source word processor called Writer, for example, you can save your files in almost any format, including Microsoft Word, 2000. I would imagine, I don't know this for sure, but I would imagine that the GIMP will allow you to save files in Adobe-compatible formats.
We'll talk more. I have to interrupt and go away, pay some bills. We'll be right back after the short break talking with Bill McCarty and Wade Rausch. Stay with us. Talking more about Linux when we come back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato, talking about open source software and Linux. My guests are Bill McCarty, author of Learning Red Hat Enterprises, Linux and Fedora, put out by O'Reilly, Wade Rausch, Senior Editor, Technology Review, San Francisco. He joins us, our member station KQED in San Francisco. Let's talk about, that is a big issue. Before you switch systems, you want to know if you can talk to other people. Will your files be readable? Can you print, to other printers? These are legitimate concerns, and you say that eventually you think that all the new software coming out will be compatible. Bill.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that.
Right, both
go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I was going to say in Kathy's situation, she might prefer to be able to save her files in the so-called Adobe Photoshop native format, PSD. But as Wade was suggesting, Linux supports a variety of standard formats, tagged image file format, TIFF being one of those. And most service bureaus that I've worked with would be happy to accept files in TIFF. Hmm. So this is generally true of the formats both understood by and produced by Linux applications. You may or may not be able to put it in the format of a particular vendor that you're used to working, but you can almost certainly put it in a format that would be conformable.
And if you just want to, a lot of people just, do a little web browsing with the computer, and they do a little word processing. And
Maybe a little email.
And a little email. And for sure, why spend all that money and get for a couple of $100? You can get a little box that just does that. Shouldn't we be seeing little appliances coming out, maybe with a Linux in it that just does that kind of stuff instead of the whole shebang?
There was an attempt at a couple of maybe 3-4 years ago. There was a generation of internet terminals. They didn't seem to sell too well, but I think today a Linux machine would be a great alternative for somebody who wants to, for example. Maybe they have elderly parents. They want to get them online. They don't want to spend $1,500. Go out and buy one of these $300 Walmart machines. They come with practically everything that that you need to do basic web browsing and email.
Yeah.
And that's also a reason that Linux is becoming so popular in places like corporate call centers, where people are they're using computers, but they're usually just kind of web browsing, doing one or two things throughout the day. They don't need the power of a Windows machine.
Hasn't IBM embraced Linux now as one of its operating systems?
They've embraced it with their pocketbook. They've pumped millions, or I think it's actually billions, into Linux development.
So they're an 800-pound gorilla. Wouldn't they add impetus to this change?
I think they are, but there are actually two changes going on simultaneously. One that's sort of the topic for discussion today, the advance of Linux into the desktop market. But IBM is perhaps even more interested in the server market, the big iron market, and there. Linux is not simply making inroads. I'd argue that it and its cousins have been and continue to be dominant.
And that's where that's where Linux came from, wasn't it?
Yes.
The server side. And now it's trying to make it over toward the desktop side.
Sure.
So this has a long history of this operating system. It's not something that's just brand new.
No, it's 30 years of experience.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-989-8255. Dan in Bristol, Indiana. Hi, Dan.
Hi, I just wanted to share some experiences I had with a recent Linux installation for a customer. I'm in favor of the open source movement and things like OpenOffice, but at this point I really don't think that Linux is ready for prime time on the desktop. I had a customer that brought me a machine that was purchased off the internet or somewhere, and he wanted Linux installed, and basically I was probably the only person to be able to do this for him. So I said, okay, we'll go ahead and do it, and he brought in a copy of Sun Java Desktop, and we tried to install that, and we ran into some problems as far as the modem that was in the machine. We had to go out and get another modem with some Intel drivers. That didn't work. He was really insistent to get a Linux machine, so we said, what do you want to do? He said, well, let's go ahead and get a SUSE desktop. So he ordered SUSE. We downloaded that, put it on for him, and now he finds out that his internet service providers aren't going to support him, and he's kind of frustrated by the whole thing.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why we were talking about Macintoshes before, which have basically the Unix, Linux sort of thing underneath it already. That's the advantage of going with something that's totally integrated and been tested out. And, the machine, you just turn it on, it pops up there.
Now, yeah, let's probably open that word support just a little bit, though, because my ISP that I use at home doesn't support Linux. But that doesn't mean that Linux is not compatible with the ISP. It simply means that if I call them for help, they won't walk me through the procedure of configuring my Linux software to work with their system. Nevertheless, it does work perfectly.
Yeah, I just have a lot of customers that have problems even trying to figure out things like viruses, spyware, worms, and to even have to basically have an operating system that's sort of a build-yourself operating system. That's kind of difficult.
I myself wouldn't describe it as a build-yourself operating system. And again, when we're talking about worms and viruses, I wouldn't hold Linux forth as being a 100% solution. But I'd say 95% of those problems go away just by virtue of your choice of operating system.
Well, Dan,
I've only
Dan, maybe you ought to get some of these Walmart boxes that you can resell.
Well, I mean, I've got a local distributor that has machines that are refurbished that I can turn around with an old copy of Windows 98 for under $200.
Right.
And it'll run. I can put open office for them so they can have a free word processor and other things like that, and the support issues, you know, aren't there. So
But you're going to get all the spam and all the adware and all those things flooding through your...
Potentially an even more serious problem with Windows 98, because Microsoft isn't very actively supporting Windows 98 vis-a-vis security problems right now. If that Windows 98 machine is connected to the Internet, you can have very serious problems that way.
Well, if I put on a zone alarm to have a firewall, give them a free antivirus like AVG, I mean, it's pretty workable.
All right, Dan, thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot.
There's interest out there. What would you say, I know, aside from buying a copy of your book, Bill, which comes with a disk inside of it, doesn't it?
Yes, it has a complete Linux distribution included for free.
And what do? You pop it in your Windows machine, let's say, or your Intel-based machine? And
I'd actually be more comfortable popping it into a machine that hasn't been used before, because during installation of any operating system, whether we're talking Windows or Linux, there's some risk of disrupting the information that's on there. And it's always nice to be able to get back to where you were.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of the Linux distributions do allow you to kind of to partition your hard drive so that you can run Linux and keep Microsoft Windows, too, so you can go back and forth at will.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that's generally true. What I'm referring to is the risk involved in that procedure. Occasionally, even experts make mistakes doing that. So the usual advice of if there's any useful information on the system, be sure you've backed it up before you begin the procedure definitely applies.
Brenda San Antonio. You know, hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi. I'm wondering if the Linux Linspire system is available on laptop. If so, how much is it, and can I get that at Walmart?
Well, you can buy a laptop. Doesn't HP have one now that comes pre-installed? Hewlett-Packard does, I think.
They do. Yeah. I don't think it's the Linspire system in that case, but it is a version of Linux. And I don't know of any Linspire laptops. I could be wrong about that. But, you know, it's certainly possible to take any laptop, wipe its current operating system off it, and install Linux.
You should. All you have to do, Brent, is type in the words Linux and laptop into your Google search engine.
You'll find a great website, as I recall, it's done at the University of Texas, called the Linux on Laptops website. If you use that as a search phrase in your favorite search engine, you'll probably turn it up. Laptops are one of the most problematical types of computers to install Linux on, because laptop manufacturers seem to put whatever part is freely available in hardware bins into the laptop computers, and laptop computers that have the same model number may have different parts inside. So it presents some unique challenges. But in general, as with any PC, you're pretty likely to be successful in getting Linux to work on a laptop.
Good luck, Brenda.
Great. Thanks so much.
What about the suggestion of getting a used PC? You can buy them very cheaply, and you can buy a new PC even without the Walmart boxes. I've seen, Tiger Direct, all these other companies, they sell these things for $200 or $300 now. And installing your own system, it should be pretty simple and straightforward that way. Right? I mean, it's just not packaged with the box that you buy.
Yeah, that's a pretty good plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, a couple of callers ago, the guy made a good point that, you have to be somewhat courageous to dive in and try Linux. You might not want to do it on the machine that you're using every day for all of your critical tasks, the machine where you've got, the last 5 years of your tax records or whatever. Because, let's face it, PCs are, still very complex machines. They don't always work the way we expect. And software is really hard to get right. Even if you're an open source programmer, and there are just too many components out there, too many different kinds of devices and cards and chips for everything to work together right all the time. Linux gets a little closer sometimes than Windows, but you still have to kind of be willing to ride out the bumps.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to James in Roanoke Park, California. Hi, James.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine.
Yeah, I just want to say I've been an IT administrator and system manager for about 15 years, and to this day I still use sort of a mixture of PCs with Windows. I have a Mac that I use personally, and Linux boxes. And the breakdown for me usually comes down At home, my children and I like to play games, and the best games are still out there, usually for a long time on the PCs. So if it wasn't for games, I probably wouldn't even have a PC at home. I use the Mac to sort of bridge the difference between home and work because it gives me kind of the best of both worlds. And at work, most of the servers I have, probably the bulk of them, are all running Linux because I find them to be more reliable, more robust, and a lot of our engineers at work also, you know, reinstall Linux on their laptops or desktops because they find them easier to get a lot of their work done. The other big advantage I've seen with Linux that you need to tinker some to find this, but there's some great sites out there that if you have a problem or an application you need, with just a little bit of searching, you can usually find, you know, dozens of basically direct hits to any kind of application problem or issue that you're that you might run across.
All right. Thanks for calling. Good topic.
Thank you.
1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can go to Brian in Somerville, South Carolina. Hi, Brian.
Hello, Ira.
Hi.
I had a couple of comments. One is to do with the live CDs.
Yes.
The best one is one called Knopix, with a K, K-N-O-P-P-I-X.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an excellent way to find out if your computer actually has hardware compatible with Linux, because the hardware detection is very good on it. I put it on my laptop, and everything worked fine, and you can actually run a small program that will then install it to the hard drive.
Oh, so when you stick the disk in, it runs off the disk, and then you don't have to do anything with your computer.
That's correct. If it turns out that some of your hardware isn't compatible, then, you know, eject the CD-ROM, and you've lost nothing.
Wow, that's a great idea.
And the other comment I wanted to make is that the young lady who was talking about using Adobe Photoshop, while there are excellent programs available like the GIMP, you can also, if you're, you know, really familiar with Adobe Photoshop or have other things that you particularly enjoy that are Windows-centric, there's a couple of products, commercial products out there that you can get that will let you run them on your Linux operating system.
Hmm.
One is called Crossover Office, and it will let you run Adobe. It'll let you run Microsoft Office and several others, like Dreamweaver.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, the other way to go is there's two things, Win4Lin and another one, name escapes me, but you can do a Google for
we'll
it.
Do a Google.
In any case, it allows you to actually install. You have to have the Windows operating system, you know, have the disk.
Right.
But you can actually install it in a virtual machine inside the Linux environment, so you don't have to dual boot.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the suggestions. If you miss them, we'll have them up on a few days. Charles will have them up on our website. You can surf over to those, click on them, find them if you miss them. We're talking about Linux this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News, with Wade Rausch, Senior Editor of Technology Review, and Bill McCarty, author of Learning Red Hat Enterprise, Linux, and Fedora, put out by O'Reilly. And just as it's a good book if you want to, you know, learn how to, and it's got the disk in it. And all the O'Reilly books, I mean, O'Reilly is known as the open software source for all the publications. And if you have any questions, they're a great publisher for that kind of stuff. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Bill and Wade, when do you think that the usage of Linux in terms of market share is going to get up to a significant amount for at least the desktops? Are they going to think it'll pass Mac? At least certainly it's equal now, probably with Macintosh, a little lower.
That's right. There's a lot of dispute about that from various partisans, but it is roughly on the same level. About 3% of the market right now belongs to Linux in terms of new operating systems that get shipped each year. That probably undercounts the actual number of people using Linux, though, because plenty of people download Linux for free. There's no record when that happens. There are probably a lot more people out there using Linux than the 3% number would suggest. But still, Linux has a huge way to go before it gets close to Microsoft, which has 94% of the market.
Mm-hmm. Bill, is there any killer app that'll need to come out for Linux, or is it basically just a slow and steady process?
It's been slow and steady, and I would suspect that if any killer app did appear in Linux, that someone would quickly make it available under Windows as well. So I'm not sure that the availability of particular applications is, you know, much of a criterion to choose between the two platforms.
What is the driving force in the open source community? You know, why do they do this? Why do they give away free software? Why do they feel the compassion for other users?
I think it's you could view it as being kind of a missionary zeal of sorts. It's driven by passion. It's programmers writing for other programmers and for people. And many of the people that are doing this work have day jobs, often as programmers. So it's not that they're doing one and not the other. It's more the case that they're doing their Linux development in addition to the other work that they do.
Wait.
Yeah, I would add two more elements. One is that a lot of these people are just driven by resentment of Microsoft, the big bad guy in this whole industry, in their eyes. And the other part of it is that they've fallen in love with a more collaborative or cooperative way of making software. The philosophy is that no barriers and sharing is just a lot more productive and a lot more efficient, really. It's going to turn out software that has fewer bugs because there are just more eyes looking at it before it gets released than you would ever have with proprietary software from a company.
So when someone has an idea of how to change the software, they take it in, they tool around with it, and then they release it for everybody to look at, comment, say this is better, this is worse. And in that,
yeah, that's exactly right, and that's another dynamic that drives this, namely artistry or craftsmanship. I think a lot of the programmers that work on open source projects are less than fully happy at their day jobs and less than fully appreciated at their day jobs. And a lot of them find the opportunity to work on open source stuff gives them an outlet for the creativity within them.
Mm. And they feel a sense of community too because they're
absolutely.
Is there a World Linux meeting every year?
Oh, several.
Oh, there are tons of
several,
them.
And local as well. Sure.
Find the Linux group in your neighborhood, and your neighborhood now is the internet.
Yeah, well, that's true. On the other hand, it's also helpful when you're having problems with hardware and that kind of thing to be able to make face-to-face contact with people. There are organizations called Local Linux Users Groups, LUG, and I can't recall the exact URL of the website.
We'll put it on our
Google for LUG or something like that, there's a fair chance, as long as you're in an urban area, that there's a LUG near you, and they probably do a Linux install day, not just this week, but a couple times a year.
All right. Thank you both for joining us. Bill McCarty, author of Learning Red Hat Enterprise Linux and Fedora out on O'Reilly, and Wade Rausch, senior editor of Technology Review in San Francisco. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Ira.
We're going to take a short break and come back and talk about the real reason why airplanes fly and how it's been mistaught all these years. So stay with us. We'll be right back.